Well, it's so great to have such a full meeting, to be able to see a packed. Now, I wonder how much longer we can even stay here. I mean, it's just. And by the way, if you get Jose mentioned about trying not to sit way in the back, there's always room in the front two rows. Just help yourself. You notice all the. Just come on up. A few years back, a brother made a rather insightful comment. When he noted that Yahweh and Yahshua had suffered identity theft in this culture, and at first blush, that statement didn't ring. It just sounded like some clever, fashionable thing to say. I didn't give it much thought. And then after a while, I got to thinking, you know what? It hit me. The distinguishing feature of any worship, of any mighty one, is all about the identity of the one you worship. When it comes to worshiping Yahweh, identity is everything. Nominal worship is foreign to the scriptures because they've changed Yahweh's identity, and everything else falls like dominoes. Moses asked in Exodus 3, "Who shall I say you are? Who should I tell Israel you are?" His response was, "I am." He gave Moses his identity. I am. Each Hebrew name has meaning, and Yahweh says the meaning of my name is existence. I exist, and because I exist, you exist, and everything exists. We ask the same today. Who do we tell the world Yahweh is? That's the message today. Who is Yahweh? These three words lie at the core of true worship. Knowing who he is and what he expects defines our worship and our lives as his followers. And so every new believer must ask himself or herself, what does he expect from me? From me. It's the opposite question that most of the world asks. Most of the world wants, they go in reverse. They want to know, what's in it for me? What do I get out of it? Health, wealth, prosperity, hear it all the time. All the time. What's in it for me? The true worshiper, on the other hand, knows that the only right question is, how do I serve you? And that's why we're here. We're serving him. And it's from that starting point that true worship must begin. It's a search to discover who he is, what he wants, and how we can align ourselves and our lives with his program, with his wishes. It might seem elementary to most of us, those of us who have been in this truth for so many years. But, you know, most of Christianity misses it. It's amazing. They just miss it. They don't ask the question, and so they miss the truth. In Proverbs chapter 14, need some help here. Verse 12, Yahweh says, "There is a way which seems right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death." The ways of death. We cannot, we must not worship him in our way. The record of those in the Bible who did exactly that. Is long and tragic. These are warnings for us. We spend a lifetime learning about Yahweh's identity and how Yahweh expects us to honor him. And the rest of the time, we spend trying to do it. First, we got to know what to do. Then we got to know how to do it. When I worked one summer as a kid for a builder, I had to have everything explained to me, what to do, and then I went out and tried to do it. Sometimes we mess up. I remember one time he says, okay, you put the joists on the X, you know, you nail them on the sides, and all those X's I looked at. I don't know what I was thinking, but I put the joists on the other side, next to the X and not over the X. I had to go back and tear them all up. I thought, wow, how dumb can I get? I was trying so hard to get it right, I messed it all up. We're here today as the only proper and true response to the question, who is Yahweh? Above all, we want to please the one we serve. I mean, after all, if we don't, this is pointless. If he's not happy with what we're doing, it's pointless. He comes first in our lives, which is the difference between true worship and idolatry. This is His commanded observance, and that's why we are here. Simple as that. Worshiping Yahweh is an all-or-nothing proposition. All-or-nothing. We can't dabble. We can't try a little here and do a little more. You know, I'm thinking we've got it all together. You can't keep the Sabbath 1 week and forget it 3 weeks later. You can't keep the feast 1 year and don't bother the next year. It doesn't work that way. With Yahweh, you either go all the way or you bomb. If you have been negligent, and if that statement might offend you, then don't get mad. Change your life. Get in line with His Word. Keep the days He commands. Don't let up. Don't slack off. Don't make it convenient for you. Do it because He's commanded it. All indications are that Yahshua is returning at a feast over in Daniel 8:19. I'm almost afraid to try this. Oh, here we go. This is fun. Maybe I'll just point to you and you click it. Daniel 8:19. And He said, "Behold, I will make you know what shall be in the last end of the indignation. For at the time appointed, the end shall be." Significant word. If you got an RSB, you'll have a footnote. You'll have a Strong's number. Time appointed. It is the appointed time, actually, in two different ways. A time when Yahweh, and only Yahweh, will decide when Yahshua will return. Nobody else knows. You got these guys coming out with these prognostications. Oh, He's going to come 2 weeks from now. October 30th, Yahshua's going to come back. You know, we're told not to do that. We're told not to predict His coming. That's not for us. Even Yahshua said, only Yahweh knows. It's a time with only Yahweh is going to decide. And appointed means moed, from the Hebrew moed, which is a fixed time, a festival. Indications are Yahshua is going to return at a festival, a feast. You are either in obedience and worthy to be raised when He arrives, or you're going to wait 1,000 years and take your chances with the second resurrection, which is not as blessed as the first resurrection. Yahweh called it being lukewarm, and lukewarm, brethren, is a dead end. He can't dabble. Don't dabble. You can't. Revelation 3:14. "And unto the angel of the assembly of the Laodiceans write, these things saith the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of the creation of Elohim. I know your works, that you are neither cold nor hot." Man, I wish you were one way or the other. It makes it a whole lot easier in deciding your fate. But you're in middle ground. You're in no man's land. You're lukewarm. He says, I wish you were either one way or the other, but because you're lukewarm, I can't use you. I can't use you. I'll spew you out of my mouth. You know, to most people, He's no different than 1,000 pagan mighty ones. A nameless, generic deity who accepts any man-made worship, so long as we're devout about it, making Yahweh into their image, which is what? Idolatry, isn't it? You make something in your own image, it's idolatry. Deciding when and how and where we will worship. Never occurs to most today that the one we know as Yahweh has a personal name. He has an identity. And along with that goes well-defined specific worship. He tried to get Israel to understand this over and over and over. They didn't get it. They never got it. At least not the majority. So He had to say, okay, enough of you. I'm going to turn and invite others to join in my truth. Ephesians 4:5 says there's one sovereign, one faith, one baptism. In Yahweh's instruction manual, we find only one devotion, one way of worship that He expects of His true worshipers. That applies anciently and that applies today. His feasts are a fundamental part of what He is, fundamental part of His identity and His acceptable worship. Ezekiel chapter 20, verse 10. In this chapter, Yahweh describes a rebellious Israel with whom He tried to be intimately personal, a personal heavenly father. He says, "Wherefore I caused them to go forth out of the land of Egypt, and brought them into the wilderness. And I gave them my statutes and showed them my judgments, which if a man do, he shall even live in them. So you apply. You come to the feast because you apply it to your life. You get up, you do something, you move. Don't just sit there and think about it. Moreover, also I gave them my Sabbaths to be a sign between me and them, that they might know that I am Yahweh, that sanctify them, that set them apart. We're certainly set apart today, aren't we? Certainly set apart. These ordinances are a key to his identity. He gave them to Israel as his very own people. He doesn't change his mind. These things are still important. Question. Where are there any other peoples of whom Yahweh gives a different set of instructions? Can you find it? I've looked all my life from Genesis through Revelation. I can't find it. I don't find any other days. I don't find any other way of worship for another people. But that's what you hear out there today. Oh, well, that's for Jews. That's Old Testament. You know, we're another people now. We do something different. Really? Well, show me. I'd like to find that book, chapter, and verse, because I'd be amazed that I missed it. Does he say something like, well, for the Roman Catholics to Protestants, Jehovah's Witnesses, go ahead, keep Sunday, that's fine. But to the Jews, the Seventh-day Adventists, and to YRM, I want you to keep the Sabbath. That's confusion. Let's reread that passage at the tail end of Ezekiel 20, verse 12. Moreover, also I gave them my Sabbaths to be a sign between me and them, that they might know that I am Yahweh that sanctifies them. I'm Yahweh that sets them apart. We can't do that if we don't obey and keep his word. Now, how do Sabbaths in real life reveal that he is Yahweh who sets us apart? Well, we all know what happens on the Sabbath. We have to set ourselves apart from the world. You take off from work. You take off from school to honor him when others do not. You stop work on the Sabbath and don't go shopping or eating out when others are clueless about the sanctity of the day. You're set apart. You use the Saturday Sabbath day for the highest of purposes to worship Yahweh when the world spends Saturday doing their nastiest chores. You're set apart. Clearly, you're sanctified when keeping his high Sabbaths and his weekly Sabbaths. And there's a third way we're set apart by obedience. You're set apart from the world when you keep Yahweh's days. There's no doubt about it. Spiritually, you're set apart as well because Yahweh then blesses your obedience. Get a special blessing. Jeremiah chapter 7, verse 21. I'll read this out of the NIV. But I gave them this command, obey me, and I will be your Elohim. You will be my people. Walk in all the ways I command you, that it may go well with you. Oh, but alas, they did not. They didn't listen or pay attention, and instead they followed the stubborn inclinations of their evil hearts. They went backward, not forward. Backward. That tells it all. We should all be moving forward in our walk. We should be growing spiritually in our understanding, learning more of his word, getting into it, finding out how the parallels work, the intricacies of his work, and how they all tie together into a beautiful picture of salvation. That's what we should be looking for, growing in his word. Through the years, we've seen a small percentage of believers go backward, and it's incredible to see someone who's kept his word for years and understood, baptized in his name, understood his truths, worshiped together with brethren. And all of a sudden, it's incredible. They reach, you know, once you reach the level of the sacred name and understand and live it, to step over the edge and sink back down into the world again. It's totally sad. And usually it starts with the Sabbath. Notice that? That's what we see. People start neglecting the Sabbath. The very sign that you're Yahweh's, they neglect it. I guess it makes sense if that's the way they're going. Sabbaths are a sign whereby Yahweh can be known and understood. And I'm talking about the Sabbaths. The Bible, you know, uses that as the feast days, the high days as well, as the weekly day. If it's the case that he was known by certain weekly and annual Sabbaths, and because he set Israel apart that way, as he did to keep his days, then what other Sabbaths should we be keeping today if we're in a new covenant? We're in a new system, according to most people. What other system did Yahweh give in the new covenant to replace those days he gave to Israel? Of course, the answer is none. Same days Joshua kept, same day his disciples kept. He didn't give any other days. And the only reason we have Sunday worship today is because the Roman church decided to set apart the first day of the week. And all the other churches followed right along in lockstep. Yahweh never did. Neither did Joshua, neither did Paul. They all kept the seventh day. I don't know how you can go through the Bible, the New Testament, and read that over and over, how they kept the Sabbath day, and yet switch it to the L-O-R-D's day when there's no, absolutely no justification for doing that in the Scriptures. The same annual Sabbaths they kept in the New Testament, which Israel kept to identify them as his, are still alive today. That's why we're here today. Alive and in plain sight in the New Testament. Nowhere do we find any replacement observances. Nowhere do we find that the Passover, unleavened bread, or all the other feasts have been replaced. The apostles observed them. Even the one, somebody said, a good way to start with somebody who doesn't understand the feast days, what is this, You heard of Pentecost? Oh, yeah, our church talks about Pentecost. That's one of them. Your church already recognizes, I don't know, they don't observe it like, a day, but they recognize it. That's a good way to start. That's just one of them. There's six others you need to observe. That's a good way to approach people when they don't understand the feast days. And if they have any understanding at all, they would start to think, Pentecost, yeah. Maybe there's something to that. Nowhere do we find the apostles who followed Yahshua every day, keeping anything but the seven annual feast days. Over and over we find them. Over and over. If you have an RSB, which I hope before we leave almost everybody will have one, you'll find a list, it's a great list, the back of the Bible, for the feasts in the New Testament, all the scriptures you can go through. And as Randy said in the first message, this is just the start. This Bible is a work in progress. We're going to have other editions. We only printed 1,000 this time because we knew we're going to be adding a lot more to it. Boy, I can't wait in a few years to see what it's going to look like. We're going to add many, many, many more notes, charts. It's going to be a wealth, total wealth of information, as it already is. But we plan to, put together a life's work of study and a Bible that when people ask us the same questions over and over, we just say, get the Bible. It's right in there. Or get the Bible out and read it to them. You don't have to, you'll have the answer right there. And I think it'll be helpful for them as well as for you. So nothing really changed. Paul in Galatians 6:16 calls the New Covenant Assembly the Israel of Yahweh. The Israel of Yahweh. We still have that link to the Old Testament in so many ways, and this is one of them. In 1 Corinthians 10, he says that Israel's experiences are object lessons for us. Now, that should click in the minds of people when they think the Old Testament is just a nice little storybook. Good for kids, but not for us. 1 Corinthians 10 begins, "Moreover, brethren, I would not that you should be ignorant how that all our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea, and were all baptized unto Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and did all eat the same spiritual meat, and did all drink the same spiritual drink. For they drank of that spiritual rock that followed, and that rock was Messiah. But with them, many of them, Elohim was not pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness." Notice the next sentence. "Now these were examples for us." I'm reading this out of the Old Testament. These are examples for us. They've got a lesson for us. Maybe we ought to get back and look at the Old Testament a little more. Maybe my church has it wrong. I shouldn't throw it out or ignore it. "To the intent that we should not lust after evil things, as they also lusted, neither be idolaters, which, as some of them were, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink, and rose up to play, neither let us commit fornication, as some of them committed, and fell in one day 320,000 people. If that isn't a message, you know, Yahweh obliterates 23,000 people out of, what, 2.5 million people, perhaps, at the time. I mean, that would pretty much make a statement, wouldn't it? I think I would think twice about rebellion after something like that. Neither let us tempt the Messiah, as some of them also tempted, and were destroyed of serpents. Neither murmur you, as some of them also murmured, and were destroyed of the destroyer. Now, all of these things happened unto them. Notice again, use an old English word, ensamples or examples, and they are written for our admonition upon whom the ends of the world are come. So that's one you can write down in your notes, a support of the Old Covenant Scriptures, the Old Testament. Malachi 6:3 tells us Yahweh doesn't change. Yahweh is the same, yesterday, today, and forever. If you keep the weekly Sabbath and not the annual Sabbath, so the high, I like to call them high holidays, people are all hung up on holidays, the gal at work, month before it comes, she's got everything decorated. Got her desk all decorated for Halloween now. Holidays is a big thing in this world. Holidays. Let's call them high holidays. Maybe they'll get a little more into it. Then your worship is lukewarm. You're going only halfway. Yahweh's ordinance says come out and take hold of the package deal. You can't break the bundle and claim true worship. Remember, you used to buy software. Me the same way. I hadn't bought any for a long time. But if you broke the seal, took the software out, you couldn't take it back to the store. You break the bundle on Yahweh's high holy days and the Sabbaths, you render it worthless. Because if you don't keep it all, you're not honoring Him. Yahweh made a covenant with Abraham, with promises that his seed would cover the earth like sand of the sea. We're linked with Abraham by doing the same things that Paul did, as he wrote, that those who are of the faith are blessed with faithful Abraham, Galatians 3:19. In his parable of Luke 13, Yahshua said, there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth when you see Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They're in the kingdom. They kept the old covenant, but they're in the kingdom. Something should click. And all the prophets as well in the kingdom, and you yourself thrust out because they were faithful and obedient. There's salvation, brethren, in the Old Testament. Don't let anybody tell you differently. In his parable of Luke 13, Yahshua said there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And you see these people in the kingdom, but you just couldn't quite understand and make the grade. You had too much of yourself, too much idolatry in your life, and you didn't give all to Yahweh. They're going to be rewarded with life everlasting because they follow the mandate Yahweh gave them, an Old Testament mandate no less, and those thrust out ignore the proper way of Yahweh. Exodus 19, verse 5. In order to be considered as one of his people, we're expected to keep Yahweh's covenant. Doing so will set us apart, as we've talked about. Literally sets you apart. You get up and leave home. People wonder, where are you going? I'm going to Shakamak. Tell somebody, I'm going to Shakamak. Wow. Had to explain what we're doing. Kind of weird, you know, in October, you take off for your vacation. Well, no, it's not a vacation per se. It's better than a vacation because I come away feeling good. Now, how many times have you taken a vacation, you come back, you're broke? It wasn't that great. It was hot. And all it was crowds of people, and you thought it was going to be great. There's crowds of people here, and it's great because we can all interact. We feed on each other's spirit, brethren, that Yahweh gives. Nothing like a vacation. It's 10 times better than that. So he sets us apart. Verse 5, now therefore, if you will obey my voice indeed and keep my covenant, then you shall be a peculiar treasure unto me. Set apart, special people, above all people, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. So there is our goal. Most people don't know have any idea? They always talk about, well, when I get to heaven, okay, next step, what happens? I'll just sit in the door, Yahweh. Really? Is that all? I don't know. He says, you're going to be a kingdom of priests. Yahweh doesn't sit around doing nothing. Yahweh's active. He's alive. He's working. Yahshua said, my father works and I work. Brother Bannock talked about work, getting ready for a feast. You all had to work, getting ready to come here. You know, you've got to do a lot of planning, a lot of stuffing things into the car, you know, with a shoehorn sometimes. It's work. My father works and I work. So we come, even though it's, you know, it's not convenient. You can sit home like most people and do whatever they do. Peculiar treasure. Segula in Hebrew, and it means treasured private property. Maybe that should be our next T-shirt. We already got it. Property of Yahweh, right? I think it was whose idea was that? I think that was yours, wasn't it? Okay. Anyway, we've got an old one. I think we have some of the old T-shirts, by the way, if you still want to grab one. They'll be available. Like everything else, we have to make it a habit. There's no question I'll be here next year. And by the way, we hope we'll be here next year. I think we do have it reserved, so plan on it. We may have to maybe max in the place out, but we'll do all we can. We also got some more, we'll talk about it later, some more accommodations. And so it's a habit. You know, you just do it. It's no question you're going to do it. Treasured private property of Yahweh. It means that if you want to be a priest in the kingdom, keep the covenant ordinances that Yahweh has ordained, because you're going to be doing it again in the kingdom. I mean, Ezekiel, 66, Isaiah, all over in prophecy that we're going to be observing these days in the coming kingdom. Physical priesthood simply represented a future dynamic spiritual priesthood. Everything has a type, type and antitype in the scriptures. The Ark of the Covenant that Moses was commanded to make is only a replica of something already in heaven. Revelation 11, verse 10, 19, I'm sorry. And the temple of Elohim was opened in heaven, and there was seen in it the temple of the sovereign, the Ark of the Testament or the Covenant. Moses' covenant is still binding with him. And there were lightnings and voices and thunders and thunderings and an earthquake and great hail. That covenant isn't dead and buried. The ark may be missing. All sorts of ideas where it is, but hey, Yahweh's is there in the heavens. This passage says it's alive. Revelation 15:5. And after that I looked and beheld the temple of the tabernacle, the testimony in heaven was open. And the seven angels came out of the temple, having the seven plagues, clothed in pure and white linen, and having their breasts girded with the golden girdles. Oh man, just get a glimpse of what's up there, what's out there in the heavenlies where Yahweh exists. Wouldn't that be something? Then I think we would truly know. We have the faith now, and Yahweh says that we're more blessed than those that saw Yahshua. We now, who can't see him, still believe. And that's important for our faith, for our walk, that we have that strong faith. One day that faith will be tested, no doubt. We have to remain strong to the end. So when Yahweh gave Israel a covenant that included seven annual feast days, something very significant was going on, something very important. Because as we will see, even the feasts will be a part of the coming kingdom. And then we as spiritual Israel will be observing them. For the sake of record, the feast days are found mainly Exodus 12 and 23, and of course Leviticus 23. Exodus 12 was about Israel's observing the Passover in Egypt and the feast in the wilderness after leaving Goshen in Egypt before the law was even given. Oh, that's just part of the Mosaic law. Hadn't even been brought to their attention yet. It wasn't actually in force at that time, but they had ignored it. Yahweh had to reintroduce them to it. See, Israel could not have the feast in Goshen where they were living. Yahweh specifically says they were to come out of Egypt, the Egypt of sin, and keep a feast in the wilderness. That was the main reason Moses went to Pharaoh. Let my people go. I want to keep a feast in the wilderness. To Yahweh, Exodus 5:1, to set them apart, to sanctify them. You know, we can never keep a feast in a resort area. It didn't seem right. Where are we? Hey, in the wilderness. You know, that when you set apart yourself physically, you can also it helps to set your mind apart spiritually as well. You don't have the pulls of the world that are always there. The big lesson we see here is the beginning of redemption through the Moedim, or appointed seasons of Yahweh. It was for the express purpose of honoring Yahweh to come out. The message is clear to us. It is by way of the Moedim, a called out, the holy feast days, that we come out of the world of sin and draw closer to Yahweh. And that's the all-important lesson. It's a central part of Yahweh's dealing with his people. Central part. Present to Yahweh exemplify Yahweh's will, and his people are presented to him through his days. His plan, his purpose for the earth, and that is how important and necessary they are. They're all tied up with the very design that Yahweh established when he made man. The evil one has done his level best down through the millennia to confuse and demolish them by creating counterfeit observances that wrap people up elsewhere, get their mind off onto something else, so they ignore them. Not only to keep people from observing the biblical feast, but also to make them think they're pleasing Yahweh when they observe dead-end secular holidays. These are my feasts, Yahweh thunders. And the silent response from the churches is just deafening. These are my feasts. Deuteronomy 5:33, you shall walk in all the ways which Yahweh your Elohim has commanded you, that you may live, that it may be well with you, and that you may prolong your days in the land which you shall possess. And with one united voice they thunder back, but that's Old Testament. That's the point, really. Think about it. Whatever Yahweh says do, mankind rushes to ignore. And what he says don't do, man stumbles all over himself to make sure he does it. We have a great row to hoe, brethren, teaching Yahweh's observances. It's like starting back as a babe, square one, trying to explain these things to people because they ask us, what Bible are you reading? Now you can say the RSB, but it's the same Bible you're reading. You're just not reading it. You're just not reading it point blank, you know. Yahweh's observances. They're already conditioned to think that these are for Jews and that they died with the Savior along with the rest of the law. When I was a churchgoer, I remember hearing about Pentecost. Pentecost. They said, this is Pentecost Sunday. And that was it. They recognized it, but we didn't do anything about it. I wondered why they just gave this day lip service. Because I could read Pentecost in Acts 2, and I wondered, is that all? Just mention it? So, you know, it's claimed that the New Testament church began on this observance, and basically, of course, it really goes all the way back to Israel. But so why didn't we do something about it, something special, get together, have a meal, do something to observe Pentecost, I thought. Something. But we were always reminded, of course, about Whit Sunday, Epiphany, Lent, Ishtar, Good Friday, all of that. But these weren't in the Bible, and they didn't do anything but lip service to them anyway. Except for Ishtar, I guess. And yet, the seven annual feasts loom large in the Scriptures, scattered all over Old and New Testament, and completely oblivious. It's like written in invisible ink. They just never saw it. I had gone to the minister about it, he would have said, well, Sonny, you know, that's Old Testament. And they're Jewish, and they're not for the New Testament church, and they were nailed to the cross along with the Savior. And Yahweh says, these are my feasts, and they look the other way. We were ignorant back then. We didn't understand. The seven annual Moedim are appointed times of Yahweh. They foreshadow future events. Colossians 2:16, Paul tells us that we should not let unconverted outsiders convince or judge us about the keeping of his feast days. Let no man, that means outsider, therefore judge you in meat or in drink or inspect of a holy day or of the new moon or of the Sabbath days, which are a shadow of things to come. You see, they reflect something further. There's something more to them. We can learn from them. They're a shadow. First you see the shadow, then you see the real thing, right? You're heading, the sun is to your back. You see the shadow, your shadow out there, then you come up to the real thing. Why not let outsiders judge on the propriety of observing Yahweh's days? They probably will anyway, but you just say, well, I'm sorry, someday maybe you'll understand. Should the fox guard the chicken house, I guess you could ask. Yeah, only Yahweh's people who understand and keep these days should be discerning about them. That's what he meant there. But the body is, as it was added by the translators, but let the body of Messiah discern these things. Brother Michael was talking about, you know, iron sharpening iron. If I'm making a mistake, I hope people correct me. Let the body of Messiah, because they understand the word. They're into it. They're keeping these days. They understand. They know what they're about, and they know when they're being violated. Passover was when the lamb was slain. The death angel came over, and the firstborn of everything died, except for those that had the blood around the door. Joshua became our Passover lamb. Feast of Unleavened Bread, Israel left Egypt. And when we remove from our lives sin, hypocrisy, wickedness, malice, and false teachings that lead to sin, we're in line with that feast. That's kind of what that talks about. Pentecost, of course, Feast of Weeks, the first fruits. These are the best of the best in Yahweh's resurrection. Those in the first resurrection who are going to have greater roles because they had greater hardships to overcome. Millennial kingdom, Satan's going to be chained. People are still going to have sin, but they're also going to have guides. Hopefully they're us telling them what to do. Isaiah talks about that. This is the way, walk ye in it. Don't go that way, this way, you know. It's going to be a little easier. And so that Yahweh gives the greater rewards now when things are tough. When no one seems to be going the right direction. But we go anyway. You know, we're Lot coming out of Sodom. Nobody else is coming out, just his family. Everybody else walked. And watches them go by, and all of a sudden, the meltdown. For an instant, they must have realized why Lot walked out. Thought he was a weirdo. Doesn't say that, but I'm sure that, you know, that's what they were thinking. His family just taking off and saying, we're going to the hills, we're getting out of here. So Yahweh gave his spirit in Acts 2 during Pentecost, first fruits of many more brethren to come. The last four, trumpets, atonement, tabernacles in the last great day, await future fulfillment. Yom Teruah, the day of the awakening blast, Feast of Trumpets, perhaps the time of Yahshua's return. Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur, depicting the covering of our sins, the pain of the penalty of our sins through Yahshua and his blood. Feast of Tabernacles, Sukkot. Booze, dwell in temporary dwellings. When Israel dwelt in tents in the wilderness and the harvest of souls takes place, Yahshua's return and the millennial kingdom is here. Last great day, great white throne judgment after that millennial kingdom when the second resurrection will occur. Israel kept these feasts throughout the Old Testament. Yahshua and the apostles kept these feasts as well in the New Testament. What's changed? Nothing's changed. But they're Jewish, people say. Yeah, and what was Yahshua, your Savior? Any connection there, you know? Are they Jewish? Well, let's see what the scriptures say. Leviticus 23:2. Speak unto the children of Israel and say unto them concerning the feasts of Yahweh. Oh, mistranslation, should have been Jews. Feasts of Yahweh. No, that's correct. which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, even these, if you didn't understand the first time, he says, even these are my feasts. My feasts. Yahweh, he is the I am. He's the identity. Find out more about me by keeping my Sabbath and my feasts. True worship honors me and what I want, not what you want. I will bless greatly all that do, all that get in line with my plan, with my commands. You will be greatly blessed. This is what I want. Calling out a special people, not many, a special people. Really want to take hold of me and hold on hard. Not dabble. It isn't a hobby. Some people jump from group to group like a hobby. No, you got to connect. You got to get in there and work. Paul says all these spiritual gifts that are given of Yahweh's Spirit are for a purpose, to work within the body. You don't just hop around from one place to another. You connect and you help. You work with that body. You help the brethren. That's what it's all about. So this is what Yahweh wants, because one day, as we heard this morning, we're a family. One day, we're going to be a family of Yahweh, hopefully. We prove worthy and don't drop our crowns. Yahweh never commanded anything but the weekly Sabbath, the annual feast, as a special way for his people. Some people, however, they struggle. They struggle greatly. Consider the case of Ben Believer. Ben had been a member for many years. He had heard hundreds of sermons. He had been to feasts. He attended numerous Bible studies. He read the literature. He had all the basics under his belt. In fact, he knew the scriptures quite well. For most of his walk in truth, Ben was faithful, but he had a reoccurring problem. He had a hard time with certain influences that call him away, kept pulling him away. Constantly pulling him. You know what the strongest pull was? His spouse and his family pulled him constantly, pulled him, pulled him. You don't need to do that. You don't need to go. I want you to do this. I want you to do that. Spouse and family, Ben just couldn't say no. When they wanted him to participate in some activity that drew him away from the Sabbath, he couldn't say no. Put them before Yahweh is what he did. This presented a problem because, you know, his faithfulness to Yahweh hinged on the desires of non-believers. Is that what we do? Let others determine our faith? Do we not come to the feast because we're afraid what the boss might say? You can't have off. Always tell the story of my dad. And we were living out west, and we wanted to go to a feast in Pennsylvania, and he told the boss, you know, I'm going to be gone. Well, it just happens, and this always happens this way, so, you know, Satan always throws a wrench in it. Said that, we're having a big regional sales meeting out here, all the states out west, and anybody that doesn't come, you come back to work, you're not going to have a job. Dad just took up and went to the feast. Had a good time, drove cross country, came back, went to work the next day, nobody said another word. You see, you're tested. And I submit that probably 90% of the bosses that say you're going to be fired if you don't, you know, stay here and work, you come back, they're not going to say a thing. But they want to scare you. We don't let them scare us. We adhere to Yahweh's will. That comes first. And if we do that, Yahweh's going to bless us anyway. And if they did, we find something better. It always happened in my life. I always found something better. Didn't happen very often, but, you know, sometimes it does. The Sabbath is a very sign of the true worshiper. Why would Satan not attempt to hijack that? His set apart days of worship. This enticement to pull us from the Sabbath and feast days is more powerful and influential than most all other temptations we deal with in this life. We hear it from people all the time. Well, I'd come to the feast, but you know, my wife isn't a believer. Then come to the feast. You know, sometimes you just have to take the initiative, be proactive, and do it. And it may not happen the first year, second year, third year, but eventually, and I've seen that too, along comes the wife to the feast. She realizes nothing she's going to do is going to stop you. So maybe I just ought to just, you know, when in Rome, when in Israel, do what Israel does. Look around here this feast, brethren. We have 1,300 subscribers on the magazine list. We keep a pretty tight rein on that because we don't want to waste Yahweh's money. If we haven't heard from someone in a year, we drop them. But right now we have 1,300 active subscribers. If every one of them was faithful to Yahweh, we wouldn't be here. We'd be in some hall 3 times, 4 times, 10 times this size. They brought their families. Can you imagine? Upwards of 3,000 people, if they were all faithful. Some are just learning. I'm not saying they all understand it. Most of them, you know, and some are dabblers. It's fun to read, but they just dabble. All it takes is saying no to the world, no to those who don't understand, and say, I'm going to do it anyway. If you're not convicted, you do what you have to do. Yahweh has no other observances by which he calls me, and nothing is going to stop me from coming to observe Yahweh's days. Stop wasting valuable time and start obeying Yahweh. That's the message today. How do you know that you're going to be around tomorrow? It happens so fast. My mother passed. It was a shock. All of us were just shocked. Mom was supposed to live, you know, she was going around doing, always active. I get a call from a cop telling me she's no longer here. And I couldn't think for about an hour. We don't know how long we're going to be here, brethren. Nothing in this present life is more important than serving Yahweh. There are no substitutes. Stop wasting valuable time and start obeying. Somehow we've got to get this fact through to others. Somehow. Time for dallying and putting other things and people like family and employers before Yahweh is over. Gosh is going to come. We see this, our nation, sadly, starting to implode. Things are going to change pretty rapidly. Are we putting Yahweh first? Rather than even hoarding foodstuffs, we should be putting Yahweh number one. And those things secondary, perhaps. I think of Steve Jobs, you know, the Apple founder. He did ingenious things with computers. But he just died at the age of 56. How much of his life was devoted to Yahweh? What do you think? He was a genius at envisioning computer gadgets. Now, he's the richest man in the cemetery. I wonder what he did to prepare for his eternal future. It's sad. Yeah, he made life great for a lot of people, but did he serve Yahweh? Hopefully, maybe someday he'll get some education. He'd be in the second resurrection. Let's analyze some of the reasons so many otherwise strong Bible believers are AWOL when it comes to appearing before Yahweh at his set times. So many people, they think feasts are, like tabernacles, is a camp meeting. Some churches hold camp meetings at this time. Some Sabbath-keeping groups hold camp meetings in the summer, kind of take the place of the feast. Many are not convicted of the feast because most are convinced that they need to keep just the weekly Sabbath. The feasts are something beyond that, something I don't understand. And I keep the weekly Sabbath. And this is a troubling paradox, really. Understand, the weekly Sabbath and feasts rise and fall together. When they're listed in Leviticus 23, first thing you see in the list of the feasts, first thing that comes up is the Sabbath, the weekly Sabbath. Then Yahweh says, these also are my feasts. They come together, as I said, a package deal. You can't do one without the other, the old song. You know, can't have one without the other. There are Sabbath days in every feast. Besides, we know that. High Sabbaths as well as weekly. And the foundational command for the feast in Leviticus 23 is because they are Yahweh's. And they begin weekly. Then they advance into annual Sabbaths. Back, we'd be remiss on the first day of the feast not to read Leviticus 23, first few verses there. I don't have this on the big screen, so you got your RSB or any other Bible. 23 verse 1, Yahweh spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, concerning the feasts of Yahweh, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, a holy coming together of brethren. It's really not easy to do, to fulfill that verse in your backyard. You come together where Yahweh places his name. These are my feasts. He repeats it. 6 days shall you your work be done, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of Yahweh. A holy convocation, okay? We've observed the others. Let's go jump now to verse 34. We've read all about the others before. Speak unto the children of Israel, saying, the 15th day of the seventh month shall be the Feast of Tabernacles for 7 days unto Yahweh. On the first day shall be a holy convocation. That's today. You shall do no servile work therein. 7 days you shall offer an offering made by fire unto Yahweh. And on the eighth day shall be a holy convocation unto you. You shall offer an offering made by fire unto Yahweh. It is a solemn assembly. And you shall do no servile work therein. These are Yahweh's days. Others aren't here because, as we said, they have other priorities. They have work, they have school. It's not easy to take off and then have to make it all up. But we do it. If the world isn't going to get in line with Yahweh's word, then we will. And then we'll make it work. And if, you know, they're going to spend eternity at work or school, then yeah, go ahead. But if it's Yahweh who gives us salvation, then we better get in line with his will. Then there are those who defer to the wishes of the unbelieving, as we've also mentioned. Now, if a man on the street tried to talk them out of the Sabbath, you don't have to go, you don't have to keep it that day, we just brush them off. But when a close relative, when a spouse starts getting in your face, then it's a different story. And they seem to fear or revere them more than Yahweh, the one who gives them life. Hey, you know, it's our life. We've got to do what we have to do. Yahshua told a parable about this very problem in Luke chapter 14. Then he said unto them, a certain man made a great supper. That's a feast. And bade many, and sent his servant at supper time to say to them that were bidden, come now, we're ready. General Shofar has been blown. Come, we're ready to have the feast. All things are ready. And they, all with one consent, began to make excuses. The first said to him, I bought a piece of ground. I must needs go see it. That one just kills me. Where's that ground going? Unless we have an earthquake. But he's got to go to his ground, look around. And I pray thee, have me excused. Another said, well, I just bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I've got to go prove them. I think the oxen will wait, you know. I don't think you've got to worry about that. I pray that you have me excused. And another said, I married a wife, and therefore I cannot come. Aha, there's the tough one. There's the tough one. Yahshua even knew that. So that serpent came and showed his master these things. Then the master of the house became angry, said to the servant, all right, I'm fed up. You doofuses. Go out quickly into the street and lanes of the city. Bring in here the poor, the maimed, and the lame, and the blind. And the servant said, Master, it is done as you have commanded, and yet there's still room. Still room. And the master said unto the servant, go out again into the highways and the hedges, and compel them to come in, that my house may be filled. For I say unto you, that none of those men which were bidden shall taste of my supper. Wow, pretty poignant, isn't it? None of those that turned me down, that wouldn't keep this feast, are going to be on the wedding supper of the Lamb. And there went great multitudes with him, and he turned and said unto them, if any man come to me and hate, and that means love less, and I think we have a note on that in the Bible, love not, love less his father and mother, wife and children and brethren and sisters, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. They come secondary when it comes to Yahweh. He's always first. You make it work. You do what you have to do. And whoever does not bear his stake and come after me cannot be my disciple. Well, some people think they can have it both ways, by living their own life now and then pulling it all out at the 11th hour. I have a relative that said that. Oh, I'll live my life. And when I get older, maybe I'll get interested in the Bible. You know, when I got to think about the next thing coming up in my life, then maybe I'll get serious. But right now, it's, you know, life is great. I want to pursue what I want to pursue. My life is going places. I don't have time for Yahweh. Too much life to live yet. You know, that's how children reason, isn't it? Children do that. As if Yahweh can't see through this scheme. Why is Yahweh the first one believers cut back on? He's the first one that they turn away from, when he should be the first one they turn to in times of trial or testing. By the time one reaches this level, brethren, of understanding, one should be well convicted and unwavering in our resolve and in our dedication to Yahweh in everything. Instead, we often see Hebrews 5:12 in play, operating in many lives. For when the time you ought to be teachers, you have need that one teach you again, which be the first principles of the oracles of Elohim. This is foundational. This is, you know, this isn't higher math. This is foundational. These are the things Yahweh's expecting of his people. And then we have people who got to explain it to him over again, and they know better. Well, I just can't make it this year. Well, boy, are you in your deathbed? Have your feet cut off? I mean, why can't you make it? And become as have need of milk and not a strong drink. No wonder Yahshua got so frustrated with so many people. They just didn't get it. What message do we send to others when they're watching us attend worldly functions on the Sabbath instead of attending to worship, the study of Yahweh's word? They must think, well, you're just like me. You're nothing great. This faith you have is nothing special. You're no different. That's how I do church. I go in there, warm the pew for 20 minutes, then I go out and do whatever I need to do. Hit Walmart, go to, you know, go to the buffet, clean out the garage. You're just like me. It doesn't mean anything to you. You sometimes do it, you sometimes don't. You see, we're teaching all the time, not just through our mouths. We're teaching by our actions. Those that are watching, believe me, people watch you. People watch you. You hear people say things once in a while about something personal. You think, why do you care about that? They're watching. They're watching all the time. As the old saying says, you might be the only believer, the only Bible that some people ever read, your life. What message do you send? We're supposed to be teachers to the world by our lives. And here's a message we send when we aren't totally dedicated in all things. Yahweh is not that important. He's just like a generic mighty one. And I make him in my image. I make him wait for my priorities. Do what I want to do first. He's less important than the world. I think at this point we must understand something very fundamental for the novice out there. Sabbath keeping is not Sunday church. Two different things. Totally two different things. There's no comparison. Sunday is not the Sabbath, just switched to another day. Sunday church attendance is optional in today's culture. In today's nominal worship, Sunday keeping lasts only as long as the church service. When it's over, they're done with Sunday keeping. The rest of your time is open. You can go out and pursue your own interests once you have fulfilled your obligatory time in the pew. Yahweh's true Sabbath fills the entire day. I remember my daughter-in-law was explaining to some Christian homeschoolers that how we keep the Sabbath. She went through, we keep it all day. Now we come at start at Bible study, 11:30, and then we keep it all day till the end of the day. And the one who apparently felt a little guilty, well, we do too. We, you know, we have this activity and that. And we say to ourselves, I don't think you quite get it. You know, it's an all-day thing. And we study, we worship, and we learn all day because Yahweh says it's 24 hours. Sundown to sundown. There's no comparison. It's not optional. Sabbath is not optional. Its feasts are not optional. It's an ironclad command. And if you fill it with unholy activities, you're not keeping it. Simple as that. I mean, it is black and white. People don't like to talk about it. They like gray areas. You can kind of mush around, you know, and kind of finagle here and finagle there. They like gray areas in our culture. They don't like black and white. They don't like absolutes. Our culture has gotten away from that. 100 years ago, they understood that. They don't understand that today. Well, it's all relative. You know, what's good for you, and that might be your truth, and you know, all that stuff. It's Yahweh's truth, and we just get in line with it. It's not optional. No worldly function or family member's interest must come before Yahweh. Tell them to wait. Better yet, tell them to come and observe the Sabbath with you. Maybe you'll learn something. It means having an unbelieving spouse you defer to instead of having the backbone to take a stand to keep Yahweh's observances. See, Yahweh's watching. He's watching all the time. This is your life you're living. You've got the opportunity, one opportunity to get it right. You're already past go. I mean, it's not like you're ignorant and Yahweh will overlook that, which he does say he'll do to the ignorant. We already know. We have no choice. It's all or nothing now. Once you're baptized and immersed and understand, it's all the way, brethren. You can't back off. You back off, you're lukewarm, and we know what happens to the lukewarm. We're right now working out our own salvation. When that young man said to Yahshua, what must I do to be saved? He understood he had to align his life somehow and make it pleasing to Yahshua and to Yahweh. It doesn't come by osmosis. It doesn't just happen like something, bolt out of lightning, come down, hit you, and all of a sudden you're changed. No, you've got to conform. We're all developing a spiritual trait that Yahweh can use. Don't mistake the identity of Yahweh. Don't mistake the identity of the one you worship and the way you worship, because they're all together. They go together. He tells us in the second commandment that he will not share his honor, his praise with anyone or anything else. So let's do that. Let's have a great feast. Understand that these are his days. I mean, how much better can it get pleasing him, doing what he says? Let's have a wonderful time this feast with memories that are going to sustain us the rest of the long, cold winter ahead. And it's going to be a long time before, you know, we begin the cycle again in the spring with Passover. So let these memories and the fellowship and the joy and the learning sustain us for the next several many months. Serve your brother and sister, as we learned in the first message. And you're going to reap rewards far beyond. You know, somebody once said, all you got to do is ask for help. People love to help. It makes them feel good inside. It makes them feel worthwhile. It makes them feel like they're here for something. They're useful. So serve your brethren. It's going to make you feel so good inside to do that. To reap the rewards and blessings of Yahweh. That's what we're here for. And get in line and grow in his truth so that we can go out and teach others when they ask us of the hope that is within us. And may Yahweh bless you.